Well, well, here we are.
All right, people, we're going to try something a little different today.
No, I do mind. The dude minds. This will not stand.
The only true wisdom is in knowing you know nothing.
That's us, dude.
I cannot solve your problem, sir. Only you can.
Don't mess with the bull, young man. You'll get the horns.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
I'm going to tell you something, and I want you to listen tight. It may sound like I'm talking about me, but I'm not. I'm talking about you. As a matter of fact, I'm talking about all people everywhere.
Discussing the issues that actually matter. Finding the answers using logic and reason. Now here is the host of Rush to Reason, John Rush.
All right, Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. We'll get right to our Monday Mortgage Minute here in just 1 second, as soon as we get Kurt Rogers on with us. In the meantime, we have Kevin Flesch with us, of course, Flesch Law Firm. And one text message came in a minute ago, Kevin, that I know we'll get to here shortly, is the proper, the storage law that we now have on the books in Colorado. I know that's a big deal a lot of folks want to know about, so we'll get into that as well. Plus, any other questions any of you have, please give us a call, 303-477-5600, 303-477-5600. Okay, so real quick, before we get into Kurt Rogers here, why do people need to call an attorney in the first place?
Yeah, because many times you don't know what you don't know.
Okay.
And there's lots of things in the law that I always like to equate it to walking through a field with landmines, and you never know where those landmines are. And so most of the time, there's free consultations for these sorts of things. People can call me all the time and ask questions about things, and I generally can spot check things and make suggestions about things that will help you right off the bat.
Okay.
I'll give you an example. We got hurt. I had a client that got hurt outside an RTD station downtown.
Okay.
And it was a premises liability case. They hadn't cleaned up the snow and ice and that sort of thing, but it was a government spot.
Sure.
And government agencies are immune from lawsuits, except for the maintenance of their facilities relating to snow and ice. Now, if you hadn't called me, and you normally think of, well, premises liability, it's a slip and fall case, it's a 2-year statute of limitations. But when it comes to a government agency, you have to file a notice with them by certified mail within 182 days of the event happening.
Or you're out of luck.
Or you're completely out of luck. In fact, you can sue them later, and you'll lose, and then you'll have to pay all of their attorney fees.
Oh, wow. So you don't want to do that.
No. So it's those sorts of things that people should just contact us or have the ability to give us a call. And normally it's something that we can talk about over 5 or 10 or 15 minutes and a specific issue and get it figured out. And
All the
worst that happens is you're more informed.
Which, by the way, same thing we're going to talk about with Kurt Rogers at Affordable Purchase Mortgage. He's our expert when it comes to mortgages. He's going to tell you the same thing Kevin just said. Just make a phone call and ask questions. Kurt, is that not correct?
That is correct. And we just happened to have a case of that where a customer had called us and wanted to get an idea of what they could do with the loan. And we started asking questions. And they said that they went to one of these lenders that are salary-based and that they're going to give them this great rate. And the guy mentioned that he wanted a VA loan. Well, when we talked to him, there was another loan product that was better. And what they offered him, we were able to beat by 0.5 point and $3,000 in fees because we asked questions and we listened what worked better for the customer than what he thought was best for him.
Big difference.
And some people, and you probably agree with the other mortgage folks that are out there that say, oh, we don't take a fee or it's hourly, so we're looking out. You just need to have people know what they're doing.
Right.
And that's the same thing with me when we talk about contingency fees and other things, or people are like, oh, lawyers are expensive. Well, it's because
what you pay for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you try to take shortcuts. Some of them hire football players and they got to pay for them. So you just do it in different
good
ways.
Point.
You know?
Good point, Kurt. All right. How do they get a hold of you, Kurt?
720-895-0500. And then go to our website at aimortgage.net.
Well said. Kurt, I appreciate it, man. Thanks.
Take care.
All right, take care. And don't forget, Haystack Help Radio tomorrow. Kurt will be on as well. Up next, it's Affordable Interest Mortgage. You'll listen to Kurt next, and then we'll talk to Franktown Firearms right after that. But it's Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500.
Can you believe how low rates are staying? Still in the twos. Back in the 40s and the 50s, rates were in the 5 to 6% range. How much longer are you going to wait? Take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500. Your home has never been worth more. Take AIM to get that lower rate or shorten your term. Lower your payment and pay thousands less in interest. It's your money. Call 720-895-0500 now. Affordable interest mortgage. Locally owned and family operated since 2001. Are you ready for the future financially? Many of our clients have the ability to access their equity for 30 years without raising their payments now. This prepares them for those speed bumps of life. Ask how you can become mortgage safe too. Take aim, 720-895-0500, where a reputation of putting you first and listening to you is unmatched in Colorado. Call 720-895-0500 now so you can focus on what's important, family. Regulated by DORA, NMLS 298191, Equal Credit Lender.
All right, Franktown Firearms, folks, and where you can go buy a gun. We're going to talk about some of the storage laws here in a moment, which are affecting all of you, including Franktown, by the way. 720-770-7777 or find him at klzradio.com.
Find more guns and ammo at lower prices, only at Franktown Firearms. Everyone says they value long-term relationships with their customers, but the team at Franktown Firearms back up their words with actions by keeping their prices fair and their shelves as full as possible. Because they maintain good relationships with their suppliers, the team at Franktown Firearms has developed a reputation for reliability, which allows them to keep their shelves stocked during nationwide shortages. Because they always have new shipments coming in, they haven't had to hike up prices, so you can find guns and ammo at or below MSRP. You will go back again and again to a shooting range and gun store where you feel respected, and the team at Franktown Firearms shows respect through reasonable prices and a consistent supply of guns and ammo. Fill out their contact form at klzradio.com/franktown for specific pricing. Franktown Firearms, where students become friends.
Learn how to create a tax-free income in retirement so you can make your money last. Register now for a free Social Security and Retirement Income Workshop with Al Smith of Golden Eagle Financial. Wednesday, April 28th at Ruth Chris Steakhouse on Bellevue. Dinner included. Fill out the contact form at klzradio.com/money to reserve your seat.
All right, Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. Real quick, Kevin and I were just talking through the break. Why, you know, in some cases, is it expensive to do, you know, snow removal and do it properly? Well, because the other side of the fence is there's folks out there that if you don't do that as a property owner and somebody slips and falls on your property, and negligence can be proven because you didn't take the necessary steps in taking care of that. For example, some of your property owners that are probably listening to me, if you have a clause or a contract with snow that says nobody does anything until there's 2 inches of snow, first of all, you're a total moron, because 2 inches of snow, most people can't walk in without slipping and falling. Mm-hmm. You're a total idiot if you do that as an owner.
Right.
You're going to get sued.
Yep. And if it's in there, it's great evidence for me to say that that's not a reasonable landowner.
Because yeah, 2 inches is a lot of snow.
Yeah. It's just,
so just
it is.
Real quick, for all of you listening, the reason why some of these prices for handling some of these things continues to go up is because we know the liability factor is huge there.
Yeah, and if you have those situations where you can really prove that you're being reasonable in your efforts, it eliminates the claim because the first part is the liability determination.
Good point. Okay, let's talk about proper storage, some of the new laws in Colorado.
Yep, so House Bill—
Gun laws, I should say.
Yep, House Bill 1106 that was signed into law basically is talking about when guns need to be stored in both homeowners and in the case of gun dealers, what they need to be doing. It's pretty clear. So the first thing is you have to understand that this requirement is only for guns that are in a house with individuals who are incapable of being around guns or possessing guns. So juveniles, felons, red flag law issues. So if you have somebody in the house that has got a red flag, remember they went through the process of getting the 1 year restraining orders. Those individuals, so you then have to have the guns in a gun safe. Obviously, those individuals that aren't supposed to have possession of the guns shouldn't have a key or a combo for the safe.
Shouldn't know how to get in.
And if you don't have them in a gun safe and they're just stored in a closet, then they need to have a trigger or cable lock. And the standard is when the owner knows or should know that the juvenile or resident is ineligible to possess a firearm, and that's when you need to store them in that manner.
Okay.
So the idea is, I mean, most gun owners are storing their guns in gun safes now anyway.
Just because of the theft side of the fence.
The theft side and also fire
safety,
potentially.
Fire, I mean, and theft, all that. They're valuable.
So most of us in that situation, we'll have no issue. But if you're living alone, you don't have any kids, or you don't have anybody regularly that comes around that may be a felon,
right?
Or has a red flag, then you can do whatever you want. Then this bill doesn't apply to you.
Okay.
And certainly when you're using them or transporting them,
doesn't apply. Okay.
Doesn't at all. And then the other interesting thing, that there is a defense relating to juveniles. So if you're out on the ranch and you have a gun sitting in the barn because you're worried about animals coming in and doing something to livestock or self-defense, that's perfectly fine. Okay. That's a defense in the statute.
Okay.
The other thing that people don't recognize is that felons still have the right to possess a weapon in the situation where there's imminent, serious bodily damage that's going to be done to them by someone else.
Okay.
That they have the right to defend themselves. Okay. Most people don't realize
that. I didn't know that.
Where you have a possession of a weapon by a prior offender is what the charge is. A defense to that, and there was a Supreme Court case, I think, out maybe 2016, 2017, that really articulated an understanding of sort of the way that a defendant can raise that as a defense. I'm not saying that you should try to use that as a defense in most cases, but it is a situation where this is a defense in this case, so that if you are out on the farm, you have the ability to have a gun around that's not in a safe if you're concerned about that sort of those things happening. Because most people in that situation, the kids know how to use the gun,
right?
And they're fully safe,
right?
And it's not an issue. You know, in an urban environment, you're going to have a little bit more difficulty making the argument, but it's still an argument that can be made. Because the only time that you'd really see it is when a kid has either shot themselves,
right,
or someone else, and then you're going to have a district attorney saying, you didn't follow this law.
Yeah, it's funny. In all of the years growing up in my family with my dad, started shooting when I was probably 5 or 6 years of age. My brother and sister weren't far behind. It's amazing that they didn't have gun safes back then. Nobody put anything in a gun safe.
Yeah.
Most everything was stored in closets under the bed, in a drawer, whatever. And amazingly enough, you know, myself nor none of my friends or any of us in the family ever shot each other with that.
Well, because you were taught from the very beginning that the guns, you had to expect
right.
them to be loaded at
Correct.
All times.
And you handle them as such.
And if you're
we weren't allowed to handle them.
Right. Or if you were and you were going to point it at someone, you were going to be shooting them.
Correct.
And that's what was expected.
Correct. That's what we were trained and taught.
And so.
Okay, so question for you.
Yeah.
If that's your family and you've raised your kids that way
right.
and they know all of those things and they know about everything we just got done talking about and a friend comes over.
Yes.
What happens then?
So it's the same thing. So if it's a situation where something happens where someone is shot, this is going to come up.
Okay.
I suppose the friend could go home and say, hey, mommy or daddy, I was over at Johnny's house and they have guns lying around that aren't in the safe, and that family could turn you in.
That Karen could.
Right.
Would that stick, or what would they do in that situation?
Well, they would have to talk, they would have to corroborate, they would have to figure out if they have the evidence and whether or not the sheriff in that particular jurisdiction has the time to pursue it. So it's a class 2 misdemeanor, so it's a middle range misdemeanor that you could be convicted of.
Compare that to another ticket. What's a class 2 misdemeanor? Speeding ticket?
No, speeding tickets are normally traffic petty offenses.
Okay.
Class 2 would be a DWAI.
Okay.
Low level assault, harassment.
Okay.
Shoplifting at a certain dollar
okay.
level.
So,
okay. I mean, it's still a significant
yeah.
crime, but
yeah.
it's one of those things
it's
where
it's not a felony.
It is not a felony. And it's really fine only. They would then, the court would say, hey, you've got to make sure you have these things. Now, you have this happen in Denver, they probably try to confiscate the guns and go through and say that it's some sort of nuisance.
Got
and
it.
They would, I mean, that hasn't happened yet, but I could see them doing
okay.
it because they do it with cars and
sure.
drug deals or speed contests. We've talked about that a little bit previously, where that's how Denver is dealing with the speed contest issues.
Which, by
in
the way,
city.
If we get time, we'll get into that's a big deal. By the way, it's getting
it's
bigger
huge
too.
Deal.
It's ridiculous, actually.
And they have a whole task force of people that are following.
Which, by
social
the way,
media.
They should
right, and but they're really aggressive about
now,
it.
By the way, I have no problem with
yeah.
that. They should. That's another one that I'm behind. They
well,
shouldn't be doing that stuff.
So I'm guessing that they would take the same sort of tact with this.
Okay.
That if you're, in their mind, dumb enough to have the guns out and somebody gets shot, you're not getting those guns back.
Okay. Bottom line here, do I like the law? No. On the same token, the majority of you listening that are common sense gun owners that most likely have a gun safe and or proper storage of said guns probably are never going to have any issues anyway. I guess really, Kevin, at the end of the day, who was this? Who felt
it's another
good when this
feel
passed?
Good sort of thing where that, you know, just incrementally they're doing everything they can. It's the other one that's super interesting, the Senate Bill 78 about the you get a lost gun or a stolen gun and you have to turn it in. Or you have to.
Yeah, let's talk about that one. So that's the next one.
So
that's the other half of this.
This is the report lost or stolen guns law now. We have no registry for guns.
No. None.
So,
and by the way, that's something that we need to reiterate because I get that question from lots of individuals. In fact, at times, even from family members where I think I'm pretty specific on this, and I'll even get family members ask that very question. There's a misconception that all guns are registered. They're not.
They're
folks.
Not. Now, with all of the background checks and everything that we have to go through recently, within the last 10, 20 years, if you've transferred a gun, they can go in and look for that
gun. At that gun store.
Right,
only,
at that gun store, correct. They can go in and try to figure out the ownership of a gun.
Right.
But this is the interesting thing about this Senate Bill 78 is they have no sort of background to determine ownership of a gun that they find that's been taken.
They have no idea.
Right. They have no way of knowing it unless you've reported it lost or stolen.
Right. So again, who does this help at the end of the day?
It only helps the confiscation of guns.
Right.
Because it kind of shows what they're saying that the first time that you were, how often do you have a lost or stolen gun? I've never had one.
Never.
But if I did, and I didn't report it, and that gun came up somewhere along the line that it came back to me somehow.
But how would that happen?
I was just trying to think of this when I was looking at the law. So maybe I buy a shotgun.
Okay.
And I bought a shotgun this fall, and someone steals it out on the field.
Okay.
And it comes back up somehow in a robbery or something
else.
And they are able to track it back to the purchase that I made. They would come to me and they would say, did you lose this gun? And of course, the first thing would be, would I decide whether I wanted to give up any information?
Right.
And that's.
What do you want to answer that question?
Not answering that question.
Right. I don't know.
I'm just not answering that question. So they have me purchasing it at some point and they now have possession of it. They don't know how that happened. But let's say they figure it out and they can find me guilty of this. The first time that it happens, it's a $25 fine.
So there's no teeth to it.
There's no teeth. But what they want people to do is they want people to report.
They want you to be afraid enough
because,
to do so.
Correct. Because what they want to do is they want to gather this information, I think. And this is sort of one of the things where you're like, it's not that big of a deal.
No, it is.
But it is because they're gathering more information relating to where guns have been and where they're going.
I agree.
And so the next, if it happens again, it's a $500 fine after the second or more.
So if you're a habitual gun
purchaser and someone's
victim.
Right, theft or losing your guns, then this would affect you.
Okay.
And it doesn't look like it's going to be.
Again, most people. Now, I agree. There's always some folks that you don't understand, but most people, if they knowingly have a vehicle broken into, they had a gun in it, or somebody breaks into the house and there was a gun in there, typically you've got insurance and other things going on where you're going to report those things. They're going to be on a police report and an insurance claim.
Right.
And away you go anyways because you're going to want to get reimbursed for
right.
the most part. That there, I could see where, to me, this is where this gets a little dicey. I could see where somebody owns a lot of guns.
Yeah.
So maybe there's somebody out there listening. Maybe they've got a collection. They've got, I don't know, 30, 40, 50, 80, 100 guns, whatever. I don't know, whatever the number happens to be. And, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, they keep pretty close tabs on it. But, you know, let's face it, they're not out there inventorying things on a, you know, daily, weekly basis. All of a sudden, something happens, and they're like, geez, I thought I had three of these. Now I have two. Did I really lose it, or did I misplace it, or did I leave it in a bag, or
– right.
You know, there's all these what ifs, which, by the way, everything I just said could be legit.
Because,
by the way, I've been one of those guys, like I just said a moment
ago,
where it's like,
especially
wait,
handguns.
I thought I had this thing in the safe. Did I, you know, I remember shooting it at X time. Where, you know, did I not put it back in the safe, or did I loan it to one of the kids, or whatever the case may be?
Right.
And all of a sudden, you're rolling through your mind. Well, until you can determine, and sometimes this is where I have a problem with this law, by the way. In some cases, that may take you more than 3 or 4 days to figure out.
Oh, sure.
Okay, in other words, I may not know that. It may take me a few days to just reconcile my thoughts and figure out what did I do and trace my steps and did I loan it to somebody and blah, blah, blah. Well, after all of that and you figure out, yeah, it's in fact gone, you then report it missing, you may be past that window. How does that work?
Well, it doesn't – actually, the law doesn't – they've still got to figure out what that time period is. So it's not like a car accident where you have to immediately report. I think
I thought it was like a 72-hour or 48-hour deal or something.
I don't think so. I think it's a shorter period of time. I don't think it's – you know, it's not like, oh, my gosh, instantaneously you've got to report it because they generally don't get them back instantaneously either.
Right.
So I think it's probably within a reasonable time is the way that the law is written. And they're still trying to figure out how exactly they're going to administer it. Because that's what the other thing is they don't even know exactly when it's going to start because that whole process hasn't really been – they haven't gotten the database.
They haven't defined all that.
Yeah, they haven't defined it all. So, I mean, they have the basic idea and they have the basic premise relating to what happens if you don't do it.
Bottom line, and again, folks, the bottom line is this is a big feel-good measure. It's not going to help anybody anywhere, anytime.
Anyway. Yeah, I don't see how this deters, other than gathering data, I don't see it doing anything to deter anything.
I fully agree, by the way. All right, John and Cheyenne, you're next. What's going on, John?
Hey, John, I got a question for Kevin.
Sure.
Kevin, how are you today?
Good. How are you?
Good. My wife and I, we do a lot of backpacking, in wilderness areas.
Yep.
Which are usually on either BLM land or national forest land. Whether I'm right or wrong, I'm taking my pistol with me because there's nobody around to help you at that point.
Right.
Agree.
What are the rules on that, though?
So a lot of, like Yellowstone, other places, national parks, have a lot of signs, no guns, even in the backcountry.
Yeah. Right.
So you avoid all of those. BLM and those other places, you can still carry. I've never heard any restrictions on the use of guns or the carrying of guns in any of those federal facilities.
Right. So then my second question is following that. When you're in the middle of nowhere, if you have to confront somebody and use it to protect yourself or your wife.
Yep.
You notify the authorities, and then everything I've read, it says, don't answer questions and get a lawyer before you answer any questions.
Yeah, so it's similar to a shooting in your home. You first want to report it. You tell them that you're a victim in a case, that you've had to use your gun to protect yourself from deadly force. In the event that you've shot the other person, you want to make sure that the authorities are aware of where they're at and that you don't disturb the scene too much in the way of evidence so that it doesn't look like you've done anything relating to that. You know, in the backcountry like that, that's going to be a difficult situation because you're going to be put in a situation where potentially you've shot someone. You know, how far do you give them aid and also then report it?
Well, that was going to be my next question. Usually I wouldn't use the pistol first. My wife carries a canister of bear spray.
Sure.
And I would use the bear spray first.
Yeah.
If I had to use that on a human being that was trying to attack us, what am I required then to do for first aid?
Nothing.
Zero.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's going to be debilitating, but it's not life-threatening.
Right. Okay.
I would use it and then get out of the situation and then go report it. Beyond that, I wouldn't think that you have any responsibility. I mean, if they're threatening you enough that you think you have to use it, get yourself out
use
of the situation.
Use it and run.
Yep.
Yeah, get out of there.
Yep, and then get yourself to a place where you can make
self-service, make whatever the call, you need to do,
And then and make that call.
That's usually a 5 to 10 mile walk.
Yeah, right. No, and I completely understand.
Yeah,
But I think you want to do that so that you don't have to go to the second measure of deadly force.
Right. So, and you keep your, especially if you're in bear country, you keep your bear spray.
Oh, yeah, right outside.
I have a chest holster for it. So it's right there.
Yep.
And, so you'd say use the bear spray first and only the pistol if you have to.
Yes, I would. If it's unless the person is pointing a gun at you,
right?
Then you have
different
every
scenario.
Absolutely. I mean,
you do what you need to.
It's the same way. I was actually watching a YouTube video this morning about a bear attack, a grizzly bear up in Alaska, and they were showing it in real time, a young bear, and the guide handled it so well. And then in the comments, he talks about, you know, I normally would have the bear spray, but I'd given it to another guide earlier that morning, and I didn't have it at that moment. And you can see he pulls out his pistol, and he's ready to shoot this bear if he needs to. There were three people there, so, you know, normally grizzly bears don't attack three or more people, and he did everything right, and the bear went away. But you got to make those split-second decisions, but having it on your chest, that would be the first thing that I would go to with a human. But if the person has got a gun on you, I'd be pulling your weapon.
It's fair game then.
Yeah, and it's on. Yeah.
I agree.
Okay. Well, you know, because you hear these stories about forest land and everything. And then the last question I have is just about, you don't have to let police in your house without a warrant. Correct?
Okay, hold. Let's do this. John, hang tight.
Yep.
I'm going to let you go. We'll come back. That's a subject
great
we
question.
Always cover
yep.
anyways. We'll take it after the break. That's a fabulous question. Hang tight, John. I'll answer that as soon as we come back. We'll segue into that. Golden Eagle Financial is up next. Al Smith. Get a hold of Al. Go to klzradio.com. Don't forget about the great gift certificates he's got available if you make an appointment with Al today. Do that before the 15th of May, I should say. And you know what? That certificate is yours. $50 per person, $100 a couple to Fleming's Restaurant. Again, klzradio.com.
Before you make any decisions about specific strategies to collect your retirement funds, you need to picture yourself in retirement. Al Smith, founder of Golden Eagle Financial, meets with plenty of people who've never thought about how they will spend their retirement years, so he starts every consultation with an exercise in imagination. You probably have a plan bouncing around in your brain somewhere. Starting a business, traveling overseas, volunteering at your church, going on a mission trip, moving closer to family. Al will help you to envision, after decades of hard work, finally having enough time to do what you want. As you describe your future goals, Al will establish a realistic projection of what you'll need in retirement. Start planning early so most of your retirement income can be tax-free. Fill out the contact form at klzradio.com/money. Advisory services offered through Foundation Investment Advisors, an SEC-registered investment advisor.
John Rush will give you the confidence to grow. Every single one of the businesses coached by John Rush made more money last year, and most of them are either moving into larger facilities or expanding to add new locations, because all of them chose to move forward aggressively rather than letting fear hold them back. John Rush will help you take the emotions out of your decisions, starting with the way you manage your employees. Send him an email now, john@rushtoreason.com.
Stay up to date with Rush to Reason after the show on Twitter @RushToReason and on Facebook.com/RushToReason.
All right, myself, Kevin Flesh, Flesh Law Firm, with me today. If you got a question for Kevin, call us 303-477-5600. All right, this question always comes up. John and Cheyenne, thanks for asking. I had it on my list as well. We always get into it. So that there's two sides of the fence. One is your domicile.
Yep.
One is the car. We're going to talk about the house first. So I'm at home, watching TV, kicking back, whatever, doorbell rings, walk to the front door, officer's there.
Can we come in?
Yeah.
No. I'll talk to you out in the front yard. That's my response, is that they don't have the right to be in your domicile unless they have a search warrant.
Okay.
So if they have a search warrant from a judge saying that they have the ability to come into the residence, and they should give it to you, they should hand it to you, let you look at it, and then they'll say, okay, who's in the house? They'll ask everyone to vacate the house, or they'll put you in a particular room, and then they'll do
whatever they come to do.
Yep, what's allowed in the search warrant. And
so it'll say?
It'll say what exactly they're there to search. And so you'll want to be scrutinizing the address, making sure that it's the right address, because
sometimes make mistakes.
Yep, they do, and that it's hopefully related to you so that you know that it's related to
do
you.
Do you have to say anything through all that?
No. Definitely not. Don't give them any ideas. Don't say anything. It's
the
same
thing. If they come to the door, they've got a search warrant, you let them in, you just shut up. Actually, yeah. I'd be calling you at that point. But
right. Yep.
Hey,
you'd
Kev,
ask.
Guess
yep,
what?
Exactly. You'd say to the officer, "May I make a phone call while you're searching my house?"
Yeah. I'm gonna call my attorney.
Right. I'm gonna. I would just see if they'd allow you to make a phone call. They'd say, to whom? And my lawyer, and see how they respond.
They better say yes.
Yeah, they should. But if they don't, then you don't, and you just follow what they want you to do.
Okay.
The other thing that some people will do is
can you video them at that time, by the
way? That's the next thing. You can videotape them until they tell you not to.
Okay.
And then it's whether or not you want to get into that situation. Is whether or not. Now, most police forces in the metro area now and within the next 6 months are all going to be having body cams.
So they're going to be recording.
So they're going to be recording everything. So when the person shows up, the police show up at your door and they have a little box on their shoulder and there's a light on, you know that there's going to be video recording. So you probably don't need to video record because they're going to be being provided it through discovery.
But if you want to do your own, you could?
You could.
Okay.
And unless they tell you specifically not to, and they give you a specific reason in which they have the ability to tell you not to. Otherwise, most officers will allow you to do it, as long as you're not getting in the way and you know, that sort of thing. Because they won't let you just walk around the house. They'll keep you in one place. Normally, a police officer will stay with you while they're looking around.
Okay.
And they will ask you, are there other people in the house? You should tell them that. Hopefully, you don't have anybody secreted in the house that's trying to, you know, that's under warrant status or something like that. But I've had that situation too. They find them, they take them into custody.
Okay. Now, so, they show up the front door. There's no paperwork.
Yes.
And they just want to chat. What do you do?
Chat outside. Chat in your front yard. Just push them back because they'll know if you're decent about it. And all you have to say to them is, I'm more than happy to talk to you, officers.
Let me step outside.
Let me step outside and you close the door behind you.
Okay.
Because you don't want to get them, because they'll push. They'll push the door open to get through.
To get across the threshold.
Yep, get across the threshold and just
through. Is that like the line?
That is the line. Absolutely. Okay. So, and what a lot of officers in their training, they'll be nice about it, but they'll be forceful in moving into the residence. So what you want to do is you want to specifically say to them, you're not coming in. I'm more than happy to listen to you outside.
So having a nice screen door is kind of nice.
Yeah. Or, yeah, especially a lot of people have security doors that you open the regular door and you're there.
Right.
Yep, and that's you leave it at that.
Okay.
And then you don't allow them in because you don't know what's going on.
The only problem
on.
With that is they can still look inside
they
to
can.
A certain degree.
And then if they have something that they think is in plain view, you know, then you've got an issue. But, again, in the event that they see something in plain view, you can, again, close the door. They can go get a search warrant and come back if they really think they have probable cause for some reason.
Okay.
But generally speaking, people allow them in. I've got a case right now where the fellow was upset with his neighbor, and they just the body camera footage is really interesting because they don't do anything aggressive other than they just are pushing the conversation forward into the house. And my client gets upset at one point and then asks them to leave, and then they leave.
Okay.
But it was...
What questions do you have to answer?
Just identity.
That's so it.
You just have to say who you are.
And do you have to show them ID?
No, you don't have to show them ID. You just have to tell them who you are.
Okay.
If they ask for ID, you can certainly say to them, this is my date of birth. This is who I am. You should be able to pull it up. You've now come to my...
You're
in
my
home.
Right.
Yes.
Right. So they'll know. Together at that point.
Yeah, they'll be able to tell.
Okay.
The same way with what's called a Terry stop. So if you're walking along the street and an officer asks you for your identification, you can tell them who you are. You don't have to do anything beyond that.
Okay. Now, I also know that, and not bad mouthing any of the police forces or policemen that are out there, but I just know that there's all sorts of ways they get trained to extract information from you because that's what they're trained to do. And in a lot of cases, they may show up at the door acting super nice.
Sure.
Hey, we had a complaint about such and such, or hey, your neighbor says such and such, or hey, have you seen any suspicious activity regarding blah, 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 blah? And just be careful because sometimes they're fishing.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And you never know what their purpose is really when they arrive.
Unless you called them, you don't know.
They provide a huge public service and they do a really good job. The majority of the police officers that I interact with are professional individuals. They're there to do a job, and they're really there to help the public. So not bad-mouthing them at all.
Right.
But at the same time, when they're at your door, you do have rights, and you can assume most of the time that they're pointing at you for some reason.
Right.
And there's something
going
on.
Even though
they
may not be saying so, they are. They wouldn't be there otherwise.
It's an adversarial situation. They generally aren't there just because they've got better things to do than just
show up at your house. They're not there to chat.
Right, they're not. Exactly. In fact, yeah, that's right.
Right? They're just not.
No, they're not.
They got other things to do.
They do have
way
other
better
things,
other
way
things to do than that.
I got pulled over recently in the office. It was a fine exchange, but it was early morning, and they thought maybe based upon some driving that I had done, because I had a guy behind me that was following me, so I was maybe weaving a little bit to make sure that where he was going, just because I was looking behind me, and I knew officers were right next to me, and they thought it was a little odd. And it was early morning; we were going hunting, so we were pulling over. They pulled me over. We had this conversation, no issues, but they thought maybe I was impaired, and I had a box of donuts in the front seat of my car. And so we got done. They didn't give me a ticket, and I said, "You want a donut?" And both of them looked at me like, "No, we don't want a donut. We got stuff to do." I'm like, okay.
That's hilarious.
I thought I'd ask.
Well, it's funny you say that, because at my brother's funeral, a good friend of his was a cop for the State Patrol up in Washington.
Yeah.
Stationed kind of in the Seattle area. And we had a great conversation, really, really great guy. And we got to talking about some of the things that you're talking about. And by the way, he reiterated as a state trooper everything you just said.
Yeah.
Even when it came to the filming of a traffic stop and so on, he's like, man, he said, I've seen it all. He said, I've had, you know, people.
Yeah.
He said, it's funny though. He said, I will actually, if I notice that they're filming me, but I can tell by looking at them, they're not going to have a good picture of me, I will say something like, you know, if you back up a foot or two, you'll actually get a lot better image of me and my badge.
Yep.
And you're fine to film me, but back up a little bit, you'll get a better copy.
Yep. That's exactly right.
It was funny to listen to him.
You know, the officers want to deal with the, first of all, traffic stops, right, are the scariest thing for them to do.
Yeah, I did ask him. I said, okay, what is the scariest thing for you as a state patrolman when it comes to a traffic stop? He says, a guy with a gun.
Yep.
He said, somebody with a gun that I don't know is there.
Yep.
He said, that is our biggest fear, because you just don't know. So we're always careful walking up.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the hands? What's going on? What are the movements inside the cab or inside the car itself? We try to look in the mirrors to see what's happening.
Yep.
What are they doing? Are they fishing for things? All the things that you've even mentioned on air is exactly the things he talked about when I asked him, what's the scariest thing you encounter?
Yeah.
And what, you know what? I don't want to be him, by the way.
No, I don't either. That's why I'm not a police officer.
No, thank you. I don't want to be him.
Yeah. And so that's what you're trying to do when it happens. Okay, they're pulling you over for a purpose. I mean, people say, well, you know, it's always the clients that I get, well, they didn't tell me why they pulled you over. It doesn't matter. They've pulled you over.
Right.
You want to make sure that they're as comfortable as possible, because your interactions with them will go so much better.
Oh, it was funny. He said the same thing. I said, okay, so how do most of these go? And he's like, well, he said, honestly, John, because I asked him, I said, what's the fastest car you've ever pulled over?
Yeah.
He said, oh, he said, I've pulled over, you know, Lamborghinis and things like that. And I said, okay, so how does that go? He's like, honestly, he said, this is, by the way, not to make anybody go do this, but what he said was, you know, he said, honestly, John, I'm more worried about taking their time at that point than I am their money. Because I already know they can afford the $200 traffic ticket.
Right.
That's not a big issue.
Right.
They can afford a $500 traffic ticket if they're driving a Lamborghini.
Yep.
That's not a big deal. He said, what they can't afford is me wasting 15 minutes of their time.
Right.
So he said, that's what I'll do. He said, I'll actually start talking to them and remind them of, you know, lives that are out there and different things and so on, and make them realize that the 15 minutes they just gave me was far more costly to them than the $200 ticket. He said, typically I just write them a warning and send them on their way, because a ticket isn't going to change anything at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But my wasting 10 or 15 minutes of their time and giving them a little lecture goes much further than actually writing the ticket. This cool cop, by the way, as you can tell.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
He gets it.
Yeah.
He really gets it.
Yeah.
But it was good, because everything you just said about how the person responds during the traffic stop has a lot to do with the outcome of the ticket.
Mm-hmm. There's completely that. And we see that in the social media posts where things go sideways on people. I mean, it's the officers aren't the majority, 90%, 95% of the officers want to get through that traffic stop and move on their day, because they've got more.
That's what he said.
Yeah, more policing to do. Yeah.
It was interesting listening to him about, and granted, this was, you know, the Washington, you know, Seattle, Auburn, that area. It was interesting to listen to him on what's the limit of when you pull someone over, which I thought was interesting. He's like, honestly, John, he's like, I got so much stuff going on. He said, if traffic is all flowing at the same speed and they're all going 10 over, I'm not pulling anybody over.
Yeah.
And he said, in fact, I do my best to not even be on the highway at that point, because if I do, I'm slowing things down.
Right.
I'm actually impeding, making things even worse. He said, now, where it's a red flag is if traffic's moving at 75 into 65 and somebody goes by me at 90, it's going to be a red flag, and I'm probably going to, you know, yank them over.
Yeah, I had an interesting call this week. A gal got pulled over pulling into a hotel, and she was all upset because she thought that she didn't have any responsibility to talk to the officers, so she wouldn't even roll down her window or get out. And the officers eventually figured out who she was by going into the hotel, figuring out what the car was registered to in the room, and then had a contact information, called her family, then figured out what she was doing there, and eventually got her out of the car. The car didn't have any tags on it, so that was the reason that they had pulled her over. So she's talking to me saying, well, they didn't have the right to do that. I said, well, they did. They had reasonable suspicion to talk with you because there's nothing indicating ownership of the vehicle or that you have it titled properly. And so,
yeah, for those of us, by the way, that a vehicle stolen, we want you pulled over.
Correct. And that's what I was saying to her. And all you would have had to do is roll down your window and show it, because she had the bill of sale.
Right, and just show it to them.
Show it to them. Say, yeah, I haven't gotten DMV yet. And they could have confirmed everything. Well, it turns out she had a felony warrant, too. Mm-hmm. So once...
Always an underlying situation.
Sure.
There.
I mean, and unfortunately, she thought she knew what she was talking about. That just made it worse. And it's one of those situations where you think about where we're at today and sort of the culture we're in. A lot of people want to jump to the conclusion of, well, I can kind of make the police officers' lives more difficult and it's going to be advantageous for us. But it's not in the majority of the time. It's just not.
It's no different than being at the checkout counter trying to return something. If you're making things nice for the clerk that's trying to handle your return, you're going to get much farther than if you're a jerk.
Now, right, that's right. And remember, you still have constitutional rights, but you can still articulate those to the officer and be fair about
it.
You
don't need to be an a-hole about
it,
is my point,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah, because that's where it escalates.
Because, by the way, I've been the guy on the other side of the counter.
Yeah.
When the guy walks in and he's that guy. And guess what you do? Every single thing possible to either waste his time, still get the return done, but you don't have to be nice about it either.
And they're the same. They're human beings. It's the same thing. Yeah,
it's no
that's
different.
Exactly right. That's exactly right. So cars, in getting back to the topic, cars, the same thing. If it's in plain view, they get to look
at it. It's all game, right?
Right. But you never allow them to do a search of your vehicle no matter what, because there's lots of places in your vehicle that would be considered private. That they can't get
your
into.
Your personal space, basically.
Yeah, you know, the glove compartment, the middle console, the trunk, anything like that is where they are, again, going to need to get a search warrant.
All right, Extreme Auto Repair is coming up next, along with Kevin. We'll let that one roll here in just a second. But Extreme Auto Repair, anything you need for your vehicle, folks, they're there for you in Parker. Find them at klzradio.com. Or, again, as I always say, you can call them directly, 303-841-1071.
Go with your gut. You know when an estimate from a mechanic doesn't feel right? Maybe they're telling you to fix a bunch of stuff you didn't even know was broken. Maybe their prices seem surprisingly high. The team at Extreme Auto Repair in Parker will give you a second opinion for free, so you know what's reasonable and what's not. They can typically beat the prices of their competitors, but they won't hold it against you if you decide to go back to the first guy. Either way, you have the peace of mind. The team at Extreme Auto Repair wants to keep you safe and keep your vehicle on the road longer, but they never want to pressure you into repairs that you don't really need. So with every estimate, the team at Extreme Auto Repair will give you a priority list showing you all of your recommended maintenance items in order from the most to least important. That way, you decide what you want to take care of now and what can wait until later. Free second opinions at klzradio.com/extreme. Promises kept.
Avoid the pitfalls with Kevin Flesh. Picture this. You're in court before a judge and jury trying to get the at-fault party's insurance company to cover your hospital bills, and the defense attorney pulls out your medical records. Comparing what you said to the police at the scene of your injury to what your doctor transcribed, you've contradicted yourself. You start to get nervous. You don't want to look like an idiot, but you simply don't recall what you said to the police. That was a long time ago. KLZ's personal injury attorney, Kevin Flesh of Flesh and Beck Law, prepares you for these kinds of questions so you never need to worry about what to say. Of course, the opposition will always try to call your credibility into question. But with Kevin Flesh, you always know exactly how to respond. Schedule a free consultation now at 303-806-8886. Kevin Flesh of Flesh and Beck Law. Trial tested. Trial ready.
Networks change, benefits change, prescription plans change, and premium costs go up. So you want an independent broker who will compare plans from many different insurance companies, hunting for the right coverage at the best price for you. Group Insurance Analysts, 303-423-0162.
Putting reason into your afternoon drive, this is John Rush.
All right, we're back. Kevin Flesch, Flesch Law Firm, by the way. If you need to get a hold of Kevin directly, 303-806-8886, or like the ad said a moment ago, fleshlawfirm.com, F-L-E-S-C-H. Steve in Colorado Springs, you're next, sir.
Good afternoon.
Hey, Flesch, Steve, what's up?
And Rush. Flesch and Rush LLP sounds like
there, that's us.
There you go.
$100 an hour firm.
That's right.
My quick question, oh, by the way, I forgot to call last week, was Wednesday, was International Be Kind to an Attorney Day. Don't
oh,
know where they got
yeah.
it.
Nice.
See?
All right.
It's a belated Be question. Nice to Attorney Day.
There you go.
There you go.
Yeah, you know, buy my donut. My question is, and I don't understand this, but for some reason, people that have worked hard, saved, and invested in income property have become the cockroaches of the Western Hemisphere and not getting paid.
Yes. Unbelievable.
And what I'm concerned about, we have one guy, but I haven't talked to anybody that has had a non-paying tenant that's gotten paid. But we had a guy, over-the-road truck driver, own rake, making 30-40% more per load, and he just pulled the COVID card, said, I don't want to work.
Yep.
So he's in us for $22,000, $16,000 in damages, with a violent 14-year-old holes in every wall, door, window, da-da-da. You know, I'm not going to live underneath that bridge for $38,000, but I could take my family on some nice trips.
Sure.
For $38,000 and or buy another income property.
Yeah.
So is this thing ever going to be resolved? Because, I mean, these Fortune 500 companies, particularly airlines, have gotten billions.
Yeah.
They realize the cash burn, outfits like airlines. But believe it or not, the vast, vast percentage of income properties are owned by little small operations.
That's right. And that's the trouble, is you don't have a lobbyist for all of these folks that seems to have the ear of Congress relating
Maybe
to.
Maybe you should be it. Maybe you should be it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we've talked about this previously, and I've had actually some folks that I was going to start an FED action for them, and because I'm really surprised that no one has pushed this issue with the governor and the executive orders that are unconstitutional relating to landowners that aren't able to get people evicted and get people out of their rental properties.
Yeah. Yeah, but to me, this is almost a commerce issue, Steve, where they're basically taking money out of people's pockets.
Yeah. And Steve, that's a big claim. So have you gotten this person or this family out of the unit yet?
Yes, only because the damage, that was the only way the courts would handle it.
Got it.
But he still owes the money.
Yeah.
He turned into a turnip.
Yep.
I mean, I put skip tracers on him. Da-da-da.
And that's the trouble is that the judgments, I mean, just like any other time, they're only as good as if you can find the people and they're working or they have assets.
That's
the trouble.
First, you got to stalk them down, and then if they're a turnip, you're going to have a problem with that.
Yep.
But I agree. We need to have some sort of lobbying going. NAR doesn't seem to want to do anything.
Yeah.
National Association of Realtors.
Yep. Well, and because they're not really hit the way you are as an individual.
No.
Well, I'm happy to talk with you further about it if we can get a consortium of folks that we can start talking to, you know, legislators around the state about it. I don't know now that FEDs are sort of opening back up again what the state can do or the feds will do, but there is a lot of money floating around for everybody else, but none for folks like yourself in the real estate market, because you're exactly right.
There's billions outstanding.
Yep, and
there's
politicians.
Billions outstanding. I'll tell you what. We have 500 people in a real estate investment group down here that would all, I think, be willing to write some checks.
Well, call the office.
Let's
have a conversation about it.
And Great idea.
I'm happy to look into it further and see what we can do with it, because I think it's a really interesting issue. Because the politicians have basically taken sides on this issue.
Yeah, I agree.
And the folks that really matter in the sense of the landowners in this state should have more sway.
They're not being represented.
They're
at
not
all.
At all.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
No, that's a great one. Steve,
as we touched on, if you lose the rule of law and private property rights, we're going to lose the country.
That's right. Exactly right.
I agree, Steve.
Yep.
Well, okay, appreciate it. 303-806-8886, that's the number to call. We got less than about 30 seconds left. What else you want to say, Kev?
It's been a fun time.
Hour and a half
I know.
Goes by like zoom.
So much fun, and I will try to come back more often. It's just been, things have picked up, we've been busy and late afternoon.
Okay.
It is what it is.
Well, I'm going to leave you all with this. We talked about this already. I just want to make sure I reiterate this. For a lot of you out there, I think there's misconceptions here. Your car, your truck is not your house.
Right. Yeah.
Same laws don't apply. And I think there's huge misconceptions there where people think, well, it's an extension of my domicile. No.
It's not.
It's not.
Yeah.
It's a car. And there's different rules there than that threshold we talked about with the house.
Absolutely. I mean, if they ask you to get out of your car while you're driving and you have to get out, and obviously you don't want to allow them to search the vehicle without the search warrant,
correct,
similar to your house.
Correct.
But anything in plain view is generally fair game.
You can see right through and
yep.
see it. It's
yep.
all there.
Yep.
All right.
Absolutely. So in your cars, be careful.
Yep.
And always think about what you're saying to the police when they're questioning you.
Stay safe. All right. Yep. A Good Shop is next, folks. Speaking of collisions and things along those lines, if you need anything along those lines at all, A Good Shop would love to take care of you. Find them at klzradio.com. Three locations, 720-541-7697.
Get your auto body work and mechanical repairs done at the same place. Most people have one shop for auto body work and another for mechanical repairs and maintenance. But Al Sturm and his team at A Good Shop can handle both. Al and Jamie Sturm are constantly looking for new ways to provide better, more convenient service for their customers because they're driven by one simple goal, to help more people. At A Good Shop in North Glen and Commerce City, they do their best to handle everything in-house so you don't need to be relying on the dealers to get your vehicle back. Bring your vehicle into A Good Shop for auto body work, and they'll take care of your struts, brakes, and alignment at the same time. Auto body and mechanical work, all under one roof. Click on the free virtual estimate button now at klzradio.com/collision and mention KLZ in your virtual estimate request for $100 off your repairs. A Good Shop in North Glen and Commerce City. Certified collision repair worth referring.
Stay up to date with Rush to Reason after the show on Twitter at Rush to Reason and on Facebook.com/Rush to Reason.
All right, Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. That's pretty much going to do it for today. Don't forget, we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. I got a full lineup of guests tomorrow. And if you missed the first hour, catch it next from 6 to 7 p.m. And again, we will be back tomorrow. So we really appreciate you guys very much. Thanks for listening. I know Kevin always enjoys being here. It's always a fast hour, hour and a half when he's here. Any legal questions you have at all, you can tell from Kevin he's a great guy. Just call him, 303-806-8886. Kevin Flesh, put that number in your phone. Otherwise, we're going to be back tomorrow. This is Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560.